Welcome to Season 3, Episode 8 of Pyro Toasty Talks. Today, it is just the two of us. It is myself, Brian, and Zona of BZ Furfur. Hi, Zona.
Hi.
And today's episode is transformation. Now, why, you may be asking yourself, are you doing an episode on transformation?
Well, it's actually not, the episode is not really about transformation, it's about ascension.
Well, yes, I was going to get to that. Because we have some very exciting news. But before we get to that very exciting news, we have some other very exciting news. Several episodes ago, we did have a contest with Aspen Rustic Creations, and a winner was selected for that contest. We announced it on Instagram, but we just wanted to let all of our listeners know that Elena from Sweet Peach Burns was the winner of our Aspen Rustic Creations mystery box.
Yay!
And we're very happy with the response that we got from that event, and we are definitely going to talk to Ark about potentially doing some other giveaways like that, because it was really successful. So thank you everybody for participating in that and showing your interest, and hopefully that is something that we will continue to do going forward.
Yes.
We in fact had such a great response that we decided we're going to do it again, this time with our friends over at RZ Masks. RZ Masks has agreed to give away a free mask to one of our listeners. We'll have another form up on our website. Head on over to pyrotoastytalks.com and submit for your chance to win your very own RZ mask. Outside of that, the big news that we want to share is that, Zona, do you want to let everyone know what is happening on June 17th?
Which is today, which is when this episode is airing, is also the opening day, Gilding the Mint, Transformations, presented by the Guild of Charlotte Artists, which is the guild that I am a part of. They have been in talks with the Mint Museum uptown in Charlotte, North Carolina, and we are in the Mint Museum, and tonight is the opening night of their big show, and I was chosen to be part of the show. So my piece, Ascension, is part of the show. Now, so I'm very, very excited.
Now, last year, for those of you who are avid listeners, would know that last year Zona created a piece, Her Sovereignty, which was also part of the Gilding the Mint in 2025. And this is, they did it a little differently this year, and yes, they actually had a jury. So her piece was picked by a professional jury.
Judge and jury, if I'm not mistaken.
And this really is an exciting event. So we wanted to share this with all of our listeners, but we also wanted to take this as an opportunity to talk about what goes into making a larger piece. So I want to start to just give people a sense of scale. Now, you got the wood for this from our friends David and Renee, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I this piece actually drove down from Pennsylvania down to North Carolina on my way back from visiting my family at Christmas time because it was too big to ship. But special thanks go out to our friends over at It's David and Renee for the beautiful piece of is it maple?
No, this is poplar.
Poplar.
I requested poplar. If you've been listening to the podcast the past couple of episodes, the past couple of months, you've heard us refer to this big mammoth piece for a while now. It is a very big panel. It is 44 by 44 inches. It is about half an inch, I think it's about a half an inch, I think, thick, of solid, clear poplar. It's massive. It's massive. It's about 20-ish pounds, I think, is what I weighed it in as it stands. And I still have to put a, I'm gonna put a frame on the back to stabilize it because I still have to mount it
And we
because
want
it
to
has to
keep
hang.
it from warping too, right?
Yes, I want to keep it from warping. I want to make it more stable because it does have to hang on a wall.
So, just to give a sense of scale, I mean, this piece would be big if it was a painting, let alone a woodburn piece.
Yes.
This is a substantial piece. I mean, I don't know, would you say it's approximately 4 Aesops wide?
See.
Yeah, I mean, Aesop's our orange cat. He's
Yes.
what we use for reference measure.
Our reference. I mean, he is at full stretch, full stretch. He's about two Aesops, stretched out.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah,
Okay,
yeah.
so that gives you all a sense of scale, and now you're all
Yeah.
far more confused than you were when we actually gave you the measurements, so.
This piece is, I mean, right now it's, I've been working inside the house on this piece. So it's actually against our backsliding door because I've been working in the corner of the, what is actually our dining room. I've hijacked part of the dining room, much to the dismay of Brian and the kids. Because they've lost half of the dining room table.
We're doing fine. We'll post a picture of it with a banana for scale.
I mean, it's yeah, stuck to the wall with duct tape. It's wild what I've done, and it's massive.
So, we wanted to use this episode as a platform to talk about what goes into making a larger piece. So, I'd like to kind of just start with getting your frame of mind. Like, why did you decide to go with a piece this large?
Go big or go home. I mean, it was truly, honestly, that was really the thing. Like when they said the max size was 4 feet, when I heard it was 4 feet, and then I found out, of course, that it was actually 5 feet. When they said it was going to be 4 feet, 4 by 4 was the max size that they were going to allow. I took the opportunity to do 4 feet by 4 feet. I don't generally do pieces this large, so given the opportunity to do a piece this large, I wanted to take the opportunity to challenge myself to do a piece this large. Because I don't get chances to do pieces this large. So why not? Because most of the pieces I do are small, you know. I think the biggest piece that I did was a sign. It was commissioned. It was a 6 foot sign. But it was like 6 feet long by 2 feet tall. But that was a commissioned piece. I don't generally get to do something this grand at this scale. So I really wanted to take the opportunity to challenge myself.
Why take up the full dimensions though? Why not just do like 4 feet tall, 2 feet wide, and give yourself a little bit more leeway? Like taking this is a big step, right? This is a lot larger. I mean, even last year when you did her, it was a large piece, but it was also composed of several smaller pieces. So it was the canvas itself was constructed of many smaller canvases. Why such a big leap?
Because I approached this one differently. Last year, I kind of worked backwards. I had an idea with her, I had an idea to begin with of what I wanted. And so I started with a frame. I had the idea of what I wanted her to look, what I wanted her to look like. So I looked for the frame and then I worked backwards. I looked for a very large frame, the largest frame I could find, and then I got the board and I worked backwards. I made the pieces to fit the frame, the largest frame that I could find. And then that's how the size ended up being the size that she was. With Ascension, they said 4x4, so I said I wanted a panel 4x4. And at first I was thinking, I don't know where I'm gonna get a 4x4 panel. And then I did think about, ordering a 4x4, but then I didn't know if I could afford it. I didn't, then it was like I didn't know how I was going to get it. And I didn't know if even David and Renee were gonna be able to get it done in time. I knew that you were going to be going up there to like in that area, but I didn't know if they were going to be able to get it done in time for you to even get it, because I think it was a couple of weeks, and I know that they had other things going on at the same time, so I didn't know if there was enough time in between, but they pulled miracles to make it happen,
As they do.
as they do. So that's why it ended up happening to be 4x4. I had the size in mind, and that's where I started from this time around.
You want to give just for people listening a description of. Like you said the name, it's Ascension. You said that the theme was transformation. Do you want to talk a little bit about the composition of the piece?
Well,
What it looks like?
I'll describe what Ascension is. When I came up with the idea of Ascension, I originally had the idea of like what is transformation and what does transformation mean to me? Because it had to be personal. And I went through many iterations of what I wanted the piece to be for me. And it always came back to a phoenix, because that is, it did symbolize transformation. The phoenix bird rises from the ashes. Fire clearly it plays a role in my life. I mean, I love fire. It's something very fascinating about the way that fire burns. Fire is really very beautiful. Just watching fire, the way fire dances on its own, and just, I didn't want to be a cliche. I wanted it to be personal. So what does transformation mean to me? This past year has been really transformative. There's a lot of things that happened in 2024 and 2025. And just like a phoenix, a lot of things burned down for me and I had to rise from it. So I wanted to put myself into this. I wanted to put myself into this piece. So there is, oh, I wanted to put a woman in there. So I put a woman in the piece. So in the piece is a woman walking on water. The water is on fire. And everything around her is on fire. The cave is on fire. And the phoenix is on fire. The entire piece, everything around her is on fire, and she's walking right through it. And she is, her dress is made of fire, and it's not touching her. She's controlling it. And the phoenix is behind her with its wings spread. And it's not protecting her, it's with her. It's almost part of her, another form of her.
Now, with a piece this size, since you said that you had in the past you had worked backwards from the frame, and for this one, you like there's not really a logical way for you to frame a piece this large, not without some kind of custom framing or so tell us a little bit about how you addressed the framing of this piece.
Well, I'd originally planned to have it framed. I was gonna have David frame it for me, but I didn't know if the frame that he had in mind was gonna work with the piece. So I opted not to have him frame it. And said that I figured I might take the chance and frame it myself. In the end, I decided to just burn the frame onto the piece itself. And in the frame, I put in pieces that symbolize transformation, different symbols of transformation, like the Luna moth is a symbol of transformation. The Celtic fourfold knot, which is another symbol of transformation, and the four seasons. The lotus, which is another symbol of transformation. The Celtic knots and Celtic border, which is just an ode to my father, who was had Celtic. Who's Irish, who has Irish history.
So, I think we've all heard about, the mythology of the phoenix rising from the ashes. What is it about a phoenix that speaks to you? Is it something about the aesthetics of it? Is it the just simply the meaning behind it? Is there something important about a phoenix to you? Does it take influences from phoenixes in other artwork or, things like Harry Potter where, phoenixes are, a symbol of rebirth? I know that's always been a big influence of yours. What is it that really drew you to the phoenix?
I mean, I guess it's the mythology of it. I mean, I like fantasy. I like the mythology. I like mythology in general. I like the concept of there are things in this world that are not necessarily logical. Myths and folklore I mean, there's the scientific and there's my scientific brain that says everything has to be logical, everything has reason. But then there's the side of me that says maybe not. Maybe there are things that are just, they don't necessarily make sense. Like, I mean, there's the myth that there's a large bird born from fire that grows really big and it's all flamey and it does all these really great things and it's really, really strong and it grows and grows and grows and then it gets to this point and then it bursts into flames when it achieves when it achieves its purpose. And then it starts all over again as a baby. And then it achieves an, and it starts all over again until it achieves another purpose. You know?
Do you feel like that's a parallel to your own life?
I think it is. I truly believe that I've spent my entire life rebirthing, I guess. I don't even know if that's a word, but I guess, yeah, rebirthing, because it's,
We'll make it a word.
I'm gonna
I'll
make it a
submit it to
word.
Merriam-Webster's.
All right, we do that. You know, like, I've spent my entire life changing, trying to grow and be better. I'm not the same person I was 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 20 years ago. I've thought about this a lot. I'm not the same person I was like 25 years ago. I've changed, I've grown. I don't know if I've gotten better. I mean, I'd like to think I've gotten better. So yeah, I've hit rock bottom. I've burned, combusted, self-combusted, set myself on fire on purpose. Just to say, you know what? I'm gonna try this all over again. I'm gonna set my entire world on fire and start fresh.
Now, working on a piece this size, what's something that when you were working on it, you didn't realize was going to be a challenge?
How big and how difficult it was going to be to maneuver around it.
Now, how did you address that?
I got a big easel. I think that was my first problem. It was, I mean, you heard me. I looked at this panel. Guys, I looked at this panel when it was still wrapped up and I said, hold up, where am I going to burn this? How am I going to burn this and get around it? Because I swear to you, I was just like, wait, where am I going to put this that I'm going to be able to maneuver around this easel? This piece of wood, not this easel. How?
Let me give a little perspective to our audience here. So, when we received this panel back in December, we brought it into the house and we put pool noodles around the edges of the panel, and we wrapped it up in a bunch of moving blankets, and it sat in our living room, leaning against the
Fireplace.
fireplace for several months, taunting us,
Taunting us.
calling all which we believe and hold true into question. It mocked us in a way that an inanimate object should have no business mocking a human being. It needed love, but was also unwilling to accept it.
It was a cat in wood
This
form.
wood had emotional damage that could only be satiated with the largest
Easel.
easel that I have ever seen.
And believe it or not, this is actually not even the largest easel that this company carries.
What company is it? Meaden?
Meaden.
Meaden? Yeah, we'll put a link to it because it's actually a pretty good easel.
This is not even the largest easel that this company carries. There is one even larger than this one that we found. It is. I love this table. It's not even a. It's a table slash easel. It's great. It turns into a table. It converts, and I found like I assemble it and then disassemble it. When I lean it all the way down, I found that if I take off parts of the easel, it's easier for me to maneuver it because since I'm short and this piece is so big, I have a problem stretching enough to get to certain parts of it. So if I take off certain parts of the easel, I can actually fit. I can actually comfortably reach like the middle part of this piece. That's how big this piece is. Because the easel has like the bottom part where the piece sits on, but it has like this cup part. And because this cup part's where it sits, I can't reach over it to get to the middle of the piece. It's wild. Anyway, but if I take off that bottom piece when it's laying down, I can now reach it comfortably when it's laying down. And it turns into a table. So not only I love it, the cats love sitting on the piece because it's like, oh, another flat surface. So yes, it's yes.
It also allows the cats to eat your.
Gilding my gold flakes when I am, yeah, it's wild. But yes, that was one of the first problems that I ran into was how do I, because it wasn't gonna fit on a Lazy Susan. That wasn't gonna happen. There's no Lazy Susan that's going to work with a piece this large. So I needed to figure out.
Lazy Susans that are big enough to handle this piece are used for in train yards to move locomotive to move boxcars between locomotives.
Probably. Yes, so that was the first problem. I needed to figure out how I was going to logistically, seriously work this piece. I'm very grateful to have found this easel though, seriously, because it was very convenient to have the easel because now I could lift it up when I needed to look at it and burn on it. Sometimes I did burn on it when it was standing up. Much easier when it was laying down, but I could turn it and walk around it and do what I needed to do when it was flat. And because it turned, it's on wheels. You know how I love everything on wheels. It was very nice to just turn it, and because it is heavy, it and just turn it, and it's nice, and it gets it off of any other surface, and I don't have to worry about moving it because that was the other thing I was worried about. If I use the kitchen table, I'd have to move it every time. Anything like if we wanted to eat, or if I needed to get to a spot, I'd have to like turn it or figure out how I was gonna turn it, or walk around the whole table and it was gonna be a whole fiasco. And then there was lighting issues, like, oh, it was gonna be crazy.
Are there any other challenges that you encountered with working a piece this size that you never encountered when working with smaller pieces?
How to transfer the pattern. That was something. How to transfer the pattern. It took 33 sheets of vellum to to transfer the pattern. Now, for those who don't know, when I make a pattern, I usually what I'll do is I heat transfer. I'll do it digitally. I do it in Procreate on my iPad. I do what I have to do in terms of cleaning up the pattern or creating the pattern, and then I will print it in on my laser printer, and then I heat transfer it onto the wood. It's generally how I do it. Now make it bigger. 44 by 44 bigger. Yeah, that was 33 pages of vellum.
Why do you use vellum?
Because it is transparent. Well, translucent. Could I have used regular printer paper? Yes. I found that using the vellum was really valuable because I needed to put the pieces, I needed to put the paper down exactly where it needed to go, and I needed to tape it down so when I heat transferred it, it didn't move, and I had to be very careful about it moving. When it's a smaller piece, if it moves, meh. It's not so bad sometimes because maybe you can get away with it shifting a little bit. It's not so detrimental to the overall piece. It might not be such a big deal. Maybe it doesn't affect the overall piece in general. But with a big piece like this, anything shifting, it does matter. One page shifting is going to affect every other consecutive sheet. So it had to align perfectly. And with the translucent sheet, I could see exactly where the lines were. And I could tape them down.
It's pretty clever.
Yeah, so it was very invaluable. And I also burned myself a lot when I was heat transferring it. I've never burnt myself as many times as I did when I was heat transferring it. And it also took forever. My wrist was killing me when I was done.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like one of the... Like, if somebody's going to take on a piece this size, I think it's really important to understand, like, the time component to it, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like, well, I've done 12 by 12 pieces, so a 44 by 44 piece, I'll just multiply the time it takes me to a 12 by 12 piece by four, and that's how long it should take me to do that piece. There seems like there's so much more to it because in order to get the level of detail that you were able to get with this, even I remember just when you were working on the wings for the Phoenix, you know, you were working, you know, sometimes 24 hours straight. And I mean, it would just be like, you know, the next day there'd just be like a section of the wing done. I think it's important for anybody to understand if they're taking on a project of this scale that not to underestimate the amount of time that it takes if you want to get the level of detail that you're trying to get.
I mean, yes, the amount of detail that I put into the Phoenix, into the feathers, is, I must say, even I'm impressed with how much detail I put into the Phoenix.
Even the border with the stippling that you did around the edges.
And you know what's crazy about the border is that I remember when I thought about it and I said, oh man, how am I going to do the border? And I remember thinking, oh, it's going to look so good if I stipple it. But that's 44 times 4 inches.
four borders. Oh, that's gonna be crazy amounts of stippling. And then I was like talking to myself, I was like, well, I don't have to do teeny tiny stippling. I could do, larger stippling. And I remember doing it and thinking, what was I thinking? Why did I do this to myself?
Did you do the Renee technique of counting the stipples as you did them?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Renee will be very disappointed.
But see, I never counted the stipples. I went so far as to like just when I stipple, I just want to make sure that the stipples are next to each other and like you can't see around it. Like that's what I focus on. Like I'm not sitting there counting. I don't count. Like that's just more power to Renee because I'm not about counting. I am just about the look of it. That's where I get obsessive. I will say, and I did post this. Oh, I don't know if I posted this on Instagram. I should probably post this on Instagram, especially since now I'm going to talk about it. I actually pulled out all three of my razor tips, and I had all three of them plugged in because I was like, this is taking way too long. So I had all three of them plugged in with the same ball tips, and I had all three of them going because when one ball tip cooled down too much, I had the other ones going. So I just kept going with
You
the
should have
ball
had
tips.
one in each hand and then one in your teeth, and you could have been, just firing through it.
And I'm telling you, I found that my SL3 heated up and was just like, it burned the best. And I was just blazing. I was just like, oh, this is fantastic. It just heated up and it was like, bam, 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 bam. It was great. And then it wasn't. And then I was mad all over again.
Well, razor tips doing the
Yes.
right thing, and they're it's in the shop, right?
Yeah,
It's
so
they're
I
taking
did.
care
I
of it.
did. I sent it. I sent
We
it to
love
you.
razor tip because they stand behind their products. They
Yes,
are wonderful.
they are fixing my SL3 at the moment. But yes, so that's how I got through that. But the look is chef's kiss. And then you did ask me the other day if I regret my all my life choices when I decided, oh, let me go even crazier and then gold flake the border. Do I regret all of my life choices? Of course I do, because I'm crazy and I'm insane. But the end result, I do not regret the end result because the look, that final look,
That was an inordinate amount of time to
as an
do that. It
inordinate
was
amount of time,
crazy.
but that look,
I just remember, like
absolutely well worth
you
it.
had the painter's tape around the knot that you were putting, and I would come by and I'd see you'd be putting the flakes on, and then I'd come by like hours later and you'd be like 3 inches down because
Well,
it just
yes.
was so meticulous.
Well, that's also because I'm very meticulous. I mean, because I could have. I'm sure that I am probably OCD about it, and I could have done it a lot faster. I could have done things a lot faster. I could have done things differently and done it faster. But I do things in ways that make sense to me that are probably hella slower than other people do it. Did I have to put down the painter's tape? Probably not. It was easiest to me and it made sense to me because when I pulled up the painter's tape, guess what? I didn't have to spend 25,000 hours digging glue and gilding out of
stipples.
Which I absolutely do not regret. Because I don't know. I think I might have been very, very tempted to burn it all to hell if I had to dig gilding out of those stipples.
So tell me a little bit about the progression through working on the piece. Did your mindset change at all as you went from starting to partially complete to where you are now? Did you change your conceptually what you want to do? Did you make any alterations? Was there anything that you just really realized, like, had not considered when you were working your way through this massive piece?
I did. When I created her, I had chosen a random female. But when I got down to it, I used my face. I used my face on her. So, I mean, I don't know if she actually looks like me, but I did use my face for her. I contemplated giving her my hair color, which is blue. But then I decided not to give her my hair color because I didn't want the blue to be the center of the piece. It would be too shocking, considering the overall color theme is red, orange, and it's more like a copper reddish color, sepia color, fire colors. So I didn't want the blue would have been too...
It's like an Instagram filter.
Yeah, it would have been too... It would have taken away. I didn't want that to be the center. I wanted her to be the center. I wanted the phoenix to be the center of the piece. I wanted that to be the focus. I wanted her dress to be the focus.
Would have been an interesting contrast.
It would have been, but not... It would have given it a very different look, a very different... I think it would have changed the meaning, and it's not what I wanted. I want the theme to be powerful woman. Power. A woman's power. Not her blue hair. It wasn't about her looking like me. It was about just a woman's power. Rising from the ashes, right? Just a woman finding her strength.
What about technique-wise? Was there anything that you shifted with in terms of your technique from what you originally planned to the final result?
The making the rocks. I had an idea of how I was going to make the rocks on the side. And then when I tried it, it completely didn't work out. And on a whim, on an open session in Burn Club, we were making nibs, and I decided to make some round, funky nib. And I found that it made a really cool texture. And I used that to make the rocks. It came out really cool.
What about the blowtorch?
Well, the blowtorch, I'd always planned to use the blowtorch for the water top, because I knew I wasn't going to be able to make the look that kind of dusty, lightly burned look on top of the water. I knew I wasn't going to be able to create that look, but I knew that the blowtorch would, so I got to play with it. blowtorch.
Yeah. How many canisters of the propane did you go through?
I didn't go through that much. I didn't use the blowtorch that much. Just a little bit on the bottom.
I just know that I came in here. I kept seeing you refilling it. Maybe I just so happened to be coming in when you were refilling it every time.
The one blowtorch that I use seemed to like go through butane really fast.
Oh, butane. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that one seemed to go through it really fast. I don't know why. The other one, not so much. That's what it was.
Was there any other revelations that you made while you were going through it? Like, oh, I never would have thought that working on a piece this big would present X as a challenge.
You know, I've been thinking about how people keep telling me I should do portraits. And I keep thinking about how I wouldn't say resisting, but kind of resisting. Because I'm always worried about how, like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to make people look like people. I keep thinking that it's going to look like a caricature of people. And I was looking at her face, and I'm like, she's kind of cute. She actually looks like a person. I don't know if she looks like me, but I'm like, she looks like a person. She's actually kind of pretty. And then I was thinking about...
She definitely looks like you. I feel like she looks like you, but not you now. She looks like you, like, in your 30s.
Okay.
Like a younger you.
Okay.
Go take a look at a picture of yourself from, like, you know, like early 2000s and compare with that picture, and I think it's...
I don't really know what that means, but okay.
I think that it's probably something of a representation of how you see yourself.
Okay. Interesting.
Like, I know personally when I picture myself, I picture myself at a certain point in my life. Like, what I looked like at a certain age. And...
I mean, that wasn't intentional. Again, it was a last minute thing. Her face was actually the last thing that I did. Because I kept going back and forth about whether I was going to use my face as a model. I didn't know if I was going to use her face or not. If I was going to use my face as the model for her face. I kept going back and forth because I didn't know if I wanted to or not. And ultimately, I decided, why not? I was going to put little Easter egg, I guess. Let's see how many people actually listen to the pod. And here, that little Easter egg about it. So... Yeah, so I guess in answer to your question, what did I realize when I was doing it is, so I was thinking about how, you know, I think about, am I ready to do portraits? Can I do people? And I looked at that picture, and I looked at her, I looked at Ascension, and I thought about Rosie, the Riveter, and I thought about not all the other, but you know, I've done other people, like people, and I'm like, I can do people. And so maybe I don't have that much to worry about in terms of doing people.
Right. So tell me, you talked a little bit about some of the more time-intensive things. Was there anything that you found to be absolutely frustrating about the process?
What I'm finding frustrating is actually gilding the dress. I think I finally figured it out.
But that doesn't have to do with the size or the scale of the piece. No. That's just working with that gilding stuff.
It's not really working with it. It's I know what I wanted it to, I know what I want it to look like, and I just
it's not cooperating.
It wasn't cooperating. But I think I finally figured out how to make it work. So, beating it into submission.
Don't beat Ascension Zona.
I mean,
the Phoenix would get upset.
Yeah. Well, knowing her, she'll just set me on fire.
That's fortunate that she is a fictional thing. That won't actually happen.
Listen, my dreams are wild, so.
Anything else? Anything frustrating about dealing with the scale of this piece?
I think just maneuvering. Maneuvering is a little frustrating. I don't know if it has to do with the confinement of, like, the particular space that I'm in. Just because, I mean, if it was in a bigger, more open spot, turning it, I wouldn't be so worried about it bumping into things. I mean, I did, like, lose my arm went numb at some point. Just from
only once?
Well, my arm went completely numb once. My hand from the wrist down went numb a couple of times. That's about it. I mean, otherwise, no.
Would you take on a piece this size again?
I would.
Looking back on the process as a whole,
mm-hmm.
do you think the piece represents something different to you now than it did conceptually to you when you were starting it? When you sat down to work on this piece, you had an idea,
mm-hmm.
and that idea resonated with you in some way.
Mm-hmm.
100+ hours later,
we're pushing 200, but okay.
Fair enough. That still qualifies as 100 plus. You can now look back on this more retrospectively. Did the meaning behind the piece change from when you initially conceptualized it to now?
I can think of a different way to bring it to life. Like I did. There's a different way that I would have represented it if I could have. I chose this form, but there was a different way that I would have done it. So.
Do you feel like the actual journey from start to finish gives the piece a different meaning to you? Because now, not only do you have this piece, but you have all the steps and the memories and the struggles and the, like, creating a nib that made the perfect rock, you know? Like, you have these stories, you have these skills, you have this confidence, like, all of these different things that you mentioned all constitute the journey that you went through creating this piece. Do you feel like the creation of the piece has meaning beyond the piece itself? The process, the journey, the steps, the struggles?
Every piece, I think. I what does it mean to me? You know, what brought me to the idea. What made me think of this as transformation? You know, what were the things that I went through that I transformed in? You know, I think about all the things. I reflect. I do a lot of reflection when I'm working, especially on a piece this big. I did the same thing with her sovereignty. Like, what were the things why? My why? What was my why when I created it? Because it's all creativity. It's all my creativity. So it was a journey. It's a lot of thinking. It's a lot of soul searching.
Do you feel like there's some sense of transformation, not only in the piece, but in you creating this piece? Do you feel that the actual creation of the peace ascension was a transformation as well? It transformed you into
A
a
better artist.
more confident, more skilled.
Every piece is a transformation. Every piece I do is more practice, is more history. It's more art under my belt. It's another piece in my own personal gallery. Every piece does it transform me? Every piece transforms me. Every piece is piece of me goes into every piece, every art that I do. So there is always a transformation.
This one, literally, seeing as you burned yourself trying to make it, and you literally put your face on it.
I did. I think there might be some blood in there too, somewhere.
I'm sure that there's
I'm relatively
many.
sure I cut myself at some point.
Well, you'll seal it, right? So that'll all get sealed in.
Well, my DNA is all over it, so.
Well, let's not let CSI know.
Well, I mean, listen.
So, tell us again where we can find this piece. Should we be listening to this podcast during the months that it will be on display?
It will be on display from June 17th to August 23rd at the Mint Museum Uptown in Charlotte, North Carolina. It will be part of Gilding the Mint Transformations.
And if you are going to see the piece and you want to let us know on Instagram that you're going to be there, we'd love to arrange to meet you at the Mint and show you to where the piece is. We can tell you a little bit about the piece, and we can also tell you a little bit about some of the other pieces by some of the other artists, as many of them are friends and peers of ours here in Charlotte. So, we'd love to hear from you if you're planning on making a trip in to come see it.
Yes. No, we're not
No, we're not
staying.
ready to stay toasty
Oh, we're
yet.
not staying. We're not staying. Oh, yes, we have people to say thank you to.
Yeah, we want to say thank you. Well, first of all, head over to pyrotoastytalks.com and enter to win a free RZ mask from our friends over at RZ Masks. We absolutely love their equipment, and we're actually going to be doing an episode on PPE in the near future where we'll be discussing some of their equipment. But if you want to get your own, enter your chance to win over at pyrotoastytalks.com. We will be at Charlotte Pride this summer.
Yes.
So come see us if you're going to be at Charlotte Pride.
We're going to be in the neighborhood market this year.
That we will. And we are also...
going to be at the NOTA Bazaar.
Yes, we will. Over by the YMCA, over in NOTA.
Mm-hmm.
That is... You have the date on that one?
August 1st.
August 1st. So we're going to have plenty of exciting events this summer in addition to the Mint. And we want to just say thank you to Lucas Luan for the music in our intro. We want to give another shout out to our friends It's David and Renee for providing us with the beautiful wood. They are making their way around the country these days, doing art shows all over the place. So hopefully they're somewhere near you and you can go see them. We also want to give a huge thank you to our friends over at Woodburn Corner. We want to thank everybody over in the Burn Club Discord for being so supportive of us. If you want to join in the conversation, head over to woodburncorner.com and join the Burn Club. We have a channel over in their Discord where we talk about all of our upcoming podcasts and take ideas for upcoming episodes if you so choose to share such information. Thank you to Basha for being so supportive of us. If you want to hear Basha, she was on episode six, I think it was.
I think it was episode six.
That was the piece, my favorite piece. We also want to remind you to check us out. We're at bzfurfur.com. You can find us on Instagram at bz_furfur. You can also find the podcast, pyrotoastytalks.com. Also on Instagram, pyrotoastytalks. If you go over to the website and you choose to be like our friend Haley, who was on the last episode, and get yourself a t-shirt, you can go ahead and help support the podcast that way. We rely on the money from those t-shirts to help offset the cost of the podcast. And we also want to just once again say thank you to Aspen Rustic Creations for being supportive of our podcast. And we want to say thanks again. We want to say congratulations again to our friend Elena from Sweet Peach Burns for winning our contest and for getting the mystery box. And with that, you can stay toasty.
Stay toasty.